Good morning and welcome to State Government Finance and Elections Committee. I'll call this meeting to order for March 8th, 2022. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. Mr. Brinks, can you take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
I'm here.
Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson's present.
Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Nash present.
Nash is present. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Bonner is present. Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Drazkowski is present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Elkins is present. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman is present. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn is present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick is present. Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley.
Present.
New Brindley is present. Representative Pulowski. Pulowski is excused. Representative Quam.
Present.
Quam is present. Representative Mason.
Mason present.
Mason is present. Chair, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum. So the next thing, order of business is approval of the minutes for March 4th, 2022. Representative Claiborne, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes be adopted.
Motion has been made to approve the minutes from March 4th, 2022. Unmute and please, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Our minutes are approved. So remember, last Friday, we were doing House File 3666, and I will bring this off the table. I laid it on the table so we can do it at a later date. Well, today's that later date. So Representative Greenman, we were at the point of taking questions and no additional testimony. Do you have an amendment for that, Representative Greenman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do, and I'm happy to explain it.
Why don't you move your amendment and then explain it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment, I think, A3, and it is simply an appropriation to reflect the fiscal note that we received.
Representative Greenman moves the A3 amendment, which is putting the appropriation into the bill. Members, if you want to unmute, we'll vote on the amendment. All in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion's approved. Questions, members? We had a bunch of questions at the end of the last meeting. I see Representative Nash, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if Representative Greenman could walk through the fiscal implications, since I believe the amendment just added was reflective of a new fiscal note that just came in.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the fiscal note came in before we heard the bill on Friday, but the appropriation just was added. The appropriation adds $178,000 for fiscal year 2023 to the Attorney General's office, which is their estimated cost. And I think that the fiscal note goes into detail about how they determined it. I think like most new bills, it's an estimate. And so I anticipate that we would revise it based on our actual costs moving forward, which is why it's a 2023 appropriation.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was the question.
Further questions?
Chair, I'll take another swing at that and
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Greenman, I think you and I had spoken about this, and I don't remember if we had been able to go into great detail since this was a week ago, but I had asked for some examples of the intimidation that has been discussed. And I spoke to my own county and a couple of others and hadn't been able to hear examples. Would you please give us some examples of what it is that you're trying to accomplish with the bill in order to take away or fix the intimidation problem.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash, for the question. There's a few different types of behavior that the bill prohibits. I would start with the intimidation provision, which is what you referenced, and go back to my bill presentation. You know, here in Minnesota, we have seen the same rising rhetoric and fear, but we luckily, as of yet, have not seen most of the credible death threats and intimidation that we've seen in other places. As I mentioned in my bill presentation, there were credible death threats against the municipal clerk in Madison, the executive director of the Milwaukee Election Commission. In Philadelphia, three city commissioners and another election official received death threats about their performance, some targeting their kids and their families. We have seen secretaries of state, including ours, threatened with serious and specific threats that have been turned over to law enforcement. Leading in, I think, in Georgia is where we've seen the worst of it, leading to credible investigations and precautions. And so as we, again, as we see where we're at, one of the reasons to do this now is we can't wait until that continues to happen here. I'm not sure if you want more examples of what's happening around the country. I know there is both a Brennan Center report and a Reuters report of investigations. I also have Jared Davidson on the, who's a testifier who works with Protect Democracy, who's tracking this nationally. But I'm happy to turn it over to him, or if that's satisfactory.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I certainly understand that there have been perhaps threats in other places, but not here in Minnesota. And I guess, Representative Greenman, one of my questions is, I know you're a lawyer, and you could answer this appropriately, but what would constitute a threat or intimidation? And I think I had asked you this when you stopped by my office. If I look tersely at somebody, is that going to be interpreted or perhaps thought of as intimidation if they themselves feel that I looked at them in a bad way, or if I gave them a sneer, can they now bring that forward to press charges? You know, my kids will tell you that I have a fantastic death stare that motivates them sometimes when I give them that look. But I'm just trying to figure out, at what level are we talking about when this bill would, if it were to become law, would become active for elections officials to allege complaints? And then another question I had that you can follow up with at the same time is, what provisions do you have in the bill, or would there be in law, for some election official to make a false claim against somebody if they were to do so?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can assure you, Representative Nash, that your death stare would not rise to the level. Let me read the language, because I think there's two parts. One, the intimidation has to both directly or indirectly threaten force, coercion, violence, restraint, damage, harm, or loss, including the loss of employment or economic reprisal, with the intent to influence an election official in the performance of official duties. Under the criminal provision of this, that is a subjective intent standard. So you would, if a prosecutor brought this, they would have to prove that you, in your brain, intended for that to be both threatening and to influence. In a civil context, you would have to go to court and prove that a reasonable election worker in that context would feel threatened with the intent to influence their election. I think a sneer, the example that you raised when we talked in the office of a boisterous or loud behavior, even yelling in the polling place, would not rise to that level unless that there was reasonable, a reasonable person, and that's not the subjective intent of the victim. That's an objective, reasonable standard that a judge would apply. And so I think that when we think about those sort of polling place and boisterous behavior. That's really what the bill we talked about last week is meant to help manage and prohibit, to make sure our election officials have the tools they need to calm those situations. This is really about the behavior that rises above that, that either needs to be criminally prosecuted or in a civil context, potentially go to court to enjoin that behavior or to seek remedies.
Representative Nash.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Greenman, I certainly understand and appreciate the intent. I hope we can continue working on this. For now, I'm voting no, but I do recognize that we do need to protect the people who volunteer to come and administer elections, or at the county level are good folks who are doing a good job. But I'm still struggling, as I had said in my office about the two bills. I'm still struggling a little bit, but I hope that we can maybe make this better. And I'm not sure where it is in that other mysterious body, but hopefully we can talk about this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, here. I'm looking at the fiscal note, wondering if the author just could clarify. You'd mentioned that you think if we didn't actually use the Attorney General's office for what's in the bill or in the fiscal note allocated 1,500 billable hours, your expectation would be that those funds would be returned back to the general fund. Is that what I understood you to say?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick. What my comment was about the fiscal note moving forward. I would have to check on that, on this $178,000. My reference was, I think, and as I'm now getting familiar with in places in lots of areas of the law, when we pass a new law that we haven't done before, I think that sometimes the agencies make estimates, but then when we have a year or two of examples of experience, we can tailor that that appropriation and put it in their budget.
Representative Kosnick.
Well, thank you. And then looking at it, I think for 20, it's 178 to begin with. Then in the second year, 2025, I believe we have total of $356,000. So it's considerably more. It's been my experience at the Capitol that these budgets don't get smaller. They actually get larger, and they become an ongoing appropriation and continuous spending. And I don't believe that I wouldn't expect to have the Attorney General's office return billable hours that we put into statute. So I think there needs to be a little bit of work on that.
Well, Representative Kosnick, if you look at the fiscal note for the first year is for 1 year. For the 2025, that's a 2 year. So basically that's double the first year. So, I mean, that's when you're looking, you're saying it's growing immensely. It's just that 2425 is a 2 year biennium, where the first year that this going in is just the second year of the biennium.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am aware of that. But then my other point, I think it is, Representative Nash brings up a valid point about the objectiveness or subjectiveness, actually, of harassment and such. Obviously, it isn't something that we should be concerned about, but I believe that there already are statutes in place for harassment. Adding it this, it seems like we're just finding a way to shuffle $356,000 to the Attorney General's office, and the author is under the impression that if they don't actually use that, we would return that to the general fund. And that's where I think we have a difference of opinion and need to do a little bit more work, and I won't be supporting the bill based on that fiscal. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, frankly, odd and even numbered years, the activity in elections is quite different. I would assume that the activity in going on during township and other off-year elections would be orders of magnitude less, which would probably have an orders of magnitude less likelihood of billable hours. So I'm confused by that note, but to the author, what is different from current if somebody makes a threat? Isn't that activity currently illegal?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Quam. And I would say to both Representative Nash Kosnick and Quam, I'm happy to work with you on the fiscal note. I know that the Attorney General bills like a private law firm does, but I agree with you, Representative Quam, that there's a cyclical nature to this. And so this does go to judiciary and next. And so I appreciate the engagement and would want to work with you on that. On the question that you asked, so there is, we do have a set of criminal statutes, broad criminal statutes. And when I started looking into this and the need for it, at the federal level, we have some protections, but at the state level, we don't have the protections that one apply to these particular public servants in the performance of their duties. We do have a set of protections around law enforcement, around emergency responders, around Department of Revenue workers. And in this context, when we're talking about this particular class of people, of election workers, of volunteers, of election judges doing this very secret administration, I think it's important, one, to have the provision altogether to really show here are the types of protections, both for a prosecutor, but also for those election workers and election judges themselves. As we heard, and if you read the testimony from election judges, there's a real question about what kind of protections they have, what legal protections to their information and other behavior. And so I thought that was really important. I will say that the pieces do draw from the language that is in other statutes. In some cases, that's specifically around other types of public servants who are doing sacred legal work. And so that's how the provision was drafted.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, what happens if someone is impeding a election worker or judge from their duties?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Quam. There's two different provisions here. There's both criminal penalties as laid out in the statute and civil ones. Obviously, with a criminal penalty, the only folks who can enforce that are city and county attorneys. I think in most cases, because it's a gross misdemeanor or lower level offense, it would be city attorneys. And then there are civil enforcement provisions that an election administrator themselves or the attorney general could bring to and importantly, and I think if we talk about some of the threats, the online threats, the doxing of releasing potentially election administrators' personal information, their housing information, there's injunctive relief, which means that you go into court and show that harm and get a temporary restraining order or an injunction to prevent that information from being released. That's another provision to try to deal with some of the pieces we're seeing. And then there's civil penalties and damages attached. Again, that would require proving to the standards laid out in the law.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if a person was observing an election judge or worker doing something that wasn't per Minnesota state statute and they objected and got into a discussion and delayed or impeded that activity, would that fall underneath your bill?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that, and I might, and Representative Kwong, and I might ask the attorney, the Secretary of State's office, there are a set of legal ways. And so what I heard you describing, and it's hard to speak in hypotheticals, but is a person, a citizen, raising legal questions or legitimate questions through their the legitimate legal process, and in that context, that wouldn't fit the statute. And so I don't know if the Secretary of State's office just has any comments on that, but that would be my comment.
I believe we have somebody here from the Secretary of State's office. Do you want to weigh in on this? Ms. Freeman, please identify yourself for the record.
Sure, I will take a crack at it, and then I might turn it over to David Maeda as well. My name is Nicole Freeman from the Government Relations Director at the Secretary of State's office. So in statute, as you know, there is a way for a challenger to be present in a polling location to challenge the eligibility of a voter who is registering to vote or somebody who is present trying to vote. Like Representative Greenman said, if there are other concerns that a resident has, you know, there certainly are those channels to raise that. I think this would stop someone from stopping the voting process, you know, like the bill says, it would stop someone from obstructing the voting process from happening.
Representative Kwong,
thank
give you
Mr.
one more
Chair.
Question, then I'm going to move on to Representative Skalski, and then we've got other people with their hands up, and we'll come back to you after that. Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm referring to is was actually a formally filed complaint where one election worker, election judge, brought up to the head person that you need two, by state statute, you need two judges to perform this function. And this is someone that had many years of experience working. And there was a discussion, and that person actually ended up being told to go home. We don't want a non-team player here, and then was removed from the roles. To me, that person, experienced person, raising an objection to state statute, not being followed, then being removed by the head person at that location at that time, would that be preventing, you know, what remedy does your bill do for that kind of impeding someone from following the state statute or Minnesota state law?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kwong. I think to the outline, the behavior that you just raised, I don't think that the statute would apply. I do think that my guess is that given the current laws you stated on the books, the remedy would be taking it through the chain and then potentially going to into court to enforce the current laws. But this, I don't think that the behavior described meets the standard of intimidation or interference, and so I don't know how it would apply.
Thank you. Representative Draskowski is the next person on my list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. I find this a very far-reaching bill. And first of all, the first thing, Representative Greenman, that strikes me is the catch and release. Democrats now want to have a gross misdemeanor for violations under this new law that happens in a polling place. So I find that to be very interesting. But some of this, Representative Greenman, I can support. You know, the obstructing access subdivision 6 on page 3, I think, you know, that's pretty straightforward. And, you know, I don't think anybody could disagree that a citizen, when they're voting, should not be obstructing access of an official. I think generally speaking, and Representative Quam raised some good points around that, but you know, that language could be worked on, and I think that's reasonable. The knowingly false allegations about an election official, however, right above it on 2.28, really strikes at something that looks to be really, really far-fetched and filled with problems. So, while Iban Mohammed was running around Minneapolis with 300 ballots in his car in 2020, people were in the polling place in Minneapolis and saw election workers with whiteout. Now, I don't know if whiteout is on the list that an election worker is supposed to have, but Representative Greenman, if one of the election judges or an observer or somebody had raised issues about having whiteout in a polling place and said that election official wasn't operating fairly or properly or something like that, under this subdivision, could they be convicted of knowingly false allegations about an election official if the election official said, no, I didn't have whiteout?
Representative Greenman, I think we're getting into of the judicial parts of this, but Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dushkowski. First of all, that provision was eliminated in the amendment on Friday that we talked about. And secondly, I don't want to get into debunked stories, especially when we're talking about a provision that's not still in the bill.
Representative Dushkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenman, it's not a debunked story. As a matter of fact, the story is very real, and Democrats just continue to deny it. But the vicarious liability and conspiracy section or subdivision number 7 on 3.5, the language there, conspires, combines, agrees, or arranges with another. So combines with another, agrees with another, arranges with another. What is the definition of that? I maybe in your legal background, there's a standard definition. I don't know. That to me appears to be problematic. But lastly, and Mr. Chair, I know you're in a hurry here, but I just have a last question. Representative Greenman, I've read Chapter 8 of statutes, and really every part of the statute is either directing the Attorney General to go after corporations or companies or individuals, but never in there did I see a section where the Attorney General goes after misbehavior, illegal behavior by people who work for government. So my question is, you know, there's disputes that can happen in the polling place, and that's what you're getting at here with the bill. You're looking at one side of that dispute. What do you place in Chapter 8, or have you thought about putting in this bill something that actually holds people who misbehave in the face of the law in the polling place who work for the government?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe there were two questions in there on the vicarious liability piece. This is language that exists in other parts of the statute. And if you want more, I can turn it over to Matt Green about how we drafted that. I will just say, when we think about something like doxing, there might be both the person who shares the personal home address of an election administrator, that's a problem. But if there is an organization or somebody who's organizing that, that's also a problem. And that is met even if they're not the original ones, right? They sent it through a private email, and that is released publicly by someone else. And so that is the behavior that it's meaning to attach. I think, and I'm not 100% clear if I understand your question about Chapter 8. What I do know is the way that it is set up, and I am happy to talk about civil enforcement, but it is using the power of the Attorney General's office to support in places just on the civil side where we see violations of the statute and potentially the need for an injunction. That is something that the Attorney General's office is more familiar with than the civil side of a county or city attorney.
Representative Skrowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. Back to the vicarious liability. Agrees with another. I mean, that seems to be very far-fetching. In terms of Chapter 8, there's nothing in there holding government accountable. Democrats have written that chapter over the years, over and over again. Government never does wrong in the face of Chapter 8, and the Attorney General's not directed specifically. Chapter 8, as I understand, is written to give special direction to the Attorney General in areas that the legislature would like to see fit. And that's what you're attempting to do with this bill as well. I guess my comment is I'd like to see us, when there's disputes or things that happen in the polling place about the law itself, we need to also keep in mind that there's two parties there. And if the government is getting it wrong, we need to hold them accountable too. And I see that missing from the bill. I'll be voting no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Skowski. Representative New, so you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier we talked about public officials doing wrong. And when they do those go directly to the Attorney General's office?
Representative New Brindley. Excuse me, Representative Greenman. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you asking about the definition of this bill pertains to elections officials, election judges, election volunteers? Is that the question you're asking? If this statute is violated, if that would go to the Attorney General's office?
Well, this
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for just jumping in. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman. We were talking about this in relation. We are establishing a new standard for a different set of people, and I'm wondering if we are applying this the same way that we do other groups of people. So when we're talking about other public officials or law enforcement, there are these enhanced protections in law for these other groups that we are now trying to create for this group. When enforcement for those other public officials, do those go directly to the Attorney General's office?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley, for that clarification. That's helpful. On the criminal side, it is the same, which is that in both contexts, this does not give the Attorney General the criminal enforcement. It would be, in this case, likely the city attorney because it's not a felony level offense. On the civil side, I would have to do and can get back to you. I'm not sure what kind of civil protections. What I will say is in this context, when we're talking about something like an election, where a key piece of this is actually in potentially about stopping conduct that may be interfering with something that is really timely, that's where the civil enforcement piece of this is. It's why we give both elections administrators the ability to protect themselves and also the Attorney General's office enforcement authority.
And members, we're straying into pieces where this into the Judiciary Committee jurisdiction. These pieces were going to be will be debated there, and I'm usually pretty liberal about that, but you know, try and keep it to the part of the bill that's in our jurisdiction. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman. This bill is expansive. I think in theory it is good. Certainly, we want to ensure that our those folks administering elections feel safe. But I think on the civil side, sending this directly to the Attorney General's office is a new and different standard than we do for other actions, which I think is concerning, particularly when we consider that our elections above all should be fair and nonpartisan, and the Attorney General's office is inherently partisan. It is a partisan office on the ballot. So that is certainly concerning. It's also, and I'm glad you addressed this a little bit, and I hope that you will continue to address this in other committees. But it seems, I mean, as you yourself indicated, Representative Greenman, and I appreciate your candor, there are a few credible threats that we've experienced in Minnesota, and yet this appropriation is allowing for 0.5 FTE attorney and a 0.5 FTE legal, is it an aide? I forget the exact wording. I have the bill pulled up and not the fiscal note. But so for something that has received relatively little attention, and there have been relatively little credible threats, few credible threats, that seems like a lot of billable hours going to the Attorney General's office. And to Representative Kosnick's point, that would not obviously be rolled back. This is just going into, it doesn't distinguish a particular fund in the Attorney General's office. This can just be used for whatever they need it to be used for. And so it's really just increasing the Attorney General's budget with very little evidence that that is necessary. So I will be a no vote today. Thank you, Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Representative Brindley. Representative Claiborne, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just, because we're coming up against the clock, I'll just keep my comments pretty short. One, I just wanted to thank Representative Greenman for bringing this really important bill. And I'd like to refer our committee and the public back to the letter of support from the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Association of County Officers, the Association of Minnesota Townships, and the League of Minnesota Cities, where they state that their members have reported concerns and that this bill will go towards helping them feel as though they're protected. So I think that's a really important piece for us to remain grounded in. And for the 30,000 of our neighbors who serve as election judges and officials, I just want to make sure that we have their backs and we are protecting them when they're doing the official duties that we ask them to do. But the question that I initially raised my hand on is wondering if Representative Greenman knows if we are, if this national conversation about things that are happening to poll workers, if she knows if this has damaged retention and hiring of our election officials.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Claiborne. And I think I just refer to what I think that we heard election director David Maeda say on Friday, which is 2021 was even harder than 2020 because of the issues of losing election judges and folks leaving because of some of those fears. So that is one of the reasons that we should act and act together. Is to give those folks, those Minnesotans who make our elections run, the confidence that they need to participate and help us do it.
And then thank just
you. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you. Just one other closing comment, and this is about just elected officials as a whole. I just want to make this comment about elected officials. I am hopeful that any official who runs for election and declares their party on a ballot will do the same as I do. Yes, I may run as a Democrat, but once elected, my election certificate and the oath that we swear when we take office is to represent all of the people of our district, not just those who voted for us. So with that, Mr. Chair, I thank you for the time.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. Representative Bonner, you've got your hand up.
Thank you, and I'll be very brief because much of my question was already contained in Representative Seaborn's. It was really about the loss of poll workers, and it's particularly seasoned poll workers who've been with us for decades. And I've read reports that state that we may be losing as much as 50% of our election judges and poll workers, and I have real concerns about that. And so I think when we talked about what are the credible threats, I have to be upfront. I think that this bill is excellent in addressing what is the most critical, which is the fact that in order to have a free, fair, and secure election, we need to have folks manning the polls. And they can't do that if they don't feel safe to do so. So I want to thank Representative Greenman for the bill. And with that, I will let my comments go so that we can get moving.
With that, I see no further hands up. Representative Greenman, you want to give your closing and then renew your motion as amended that this go to judiciary. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, and thank you, members, for the questions. And I really appreciate the engagement, Lead Nash. I appreciate our conversations and look forward to and really appreciate the extension of working on this. That is, as I said to you in your office, that is my goal. I do want to find ways to work on this because I do think it is important that we collectively, this is a challenge. This is not about, this is an apolitical challenge that we have. And I think collectively, if we can work on it to ensure that the 30,000 election workers, judges, officials, and volunteers have the confidence and protection and legal tools they need, I think our elections will be stronger and we can take that proactive strengthening our elections, not just being reactive. So I appreciate the engagement and I look forward to the vote and also the conversations that will continue as we move to the next step. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. If you want to renew your motion.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion to move how to refer House File 3666 as amended to the House Judiciary and Civil Law Committee.
Representative Greenman renews her motion that House File 3666 be as amended be referred to the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee. Mr. Brinks, can you please take the roll?
Thank you, Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash votes no.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Gostkowski.
No.
Gostkowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pulowski. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam votes nay. Chair, with a vote of 7 ayes, 5 nays, and 1 abstained, the motion prevails.
Motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the Judiciary Committee. Next, we have on our agenda this morning is Representative Long's Bill 3190. We heard this before. We heard the discussion, and we now have the fiscal note for it. So, Representative Long,
excuse me, Chair Nelson.
Representative Claiborne.
I just want to make sure that I understand the vote that we just had. Did I hear you say in the beginning of the meeting that Representative Pulowski was excused?
Yes, Representative Pulowski was excused, yes. So we will make sure that's put that way in the minutes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. And Mr. Brinks will take note of that. Again, back to House File 3190. We now have the fiscal note in front of us. And Representative Long, you want to explain just briefly what the bill is to remind us and what the fiscal note does?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did hear this bill, so I'll be very brief. This is our bill to provide some more sunshine and disclosure to help voters interpret independent expenditures and have better information when they're making their decisions in their voting booth. These types of laws are broadly bipartisan and have been enacted across the country, including in our neighboring South Dakota. The fiscal note is pretty simple. It's a $5,000 cost that the Campaign Finance Board cannot absorb. The rest of the costs they will be able to absorb. So I think quite the bargain for what we'll be getting in terms of public awareness and disclosure.
Thank you, Representative Long. Any questions of the bill before we vote on it? Any questions about the fiscal note? Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to renew my opposition to the bill and bring members' attention. I think I may have mentioned this when we brought the bill up previously, but if you have been watching things in Canada, you've seen that there have been some truckers that have been protesting certain activities by the Prime Minister there. And I was reading the news and saw that an individual that owned a gelato cafe was essentially being doxxed, much like Representative Greenman's comments from earlier. She was being doxxed for making a donation. And this came from a compromised database of donations. So one extra step over what Representative Long is advocating for. But they have had to close their business, and their owner says that she regrets making her $250 donation after she was being doxxed by people who opposed the exercise of free speech in Canada. So my question or comment is, if any one of us has a private donor who is also a business owner, and that happens frequently in many of our races, the publication on everything that Representative Long is advocating for, that is going to lead to doxing of business owners who are simply making their voice heard and how they would like to see elections go. And with the prevalence of protests and vitriolic feelings being expressed outside of people's businesses, I am very worried that this effort is something that would lead to something like we've seen with this this owner of the Gelato Cafe. And you want to publish it easily, freely, and on everything, let alone not have to have it in a database that's compromised. So I'm very much in opposition to your bill, Representative Long. I think that it has just a huge chilling effect on people who want to impact who represents them at the Capitol. And again, I bring up many business owners donate to various members' campaigns. And what you are doing is you are making it even easier for people who want to hop in a car and go and protest outside of a business to do just that. It's all in the guise of transparency, as you have said, but I don't know that you have considered the implication of what happens to just an ordinary, everyday business owner who wants to donate to a candidate of their choice, and they may happen to be the top donor. So again, I'm very troubled by this. It is something that I think is, it is an on-ramp to doxing business owners and people who choose to make their thoughts known through the election process. And I think that what you are doing is putting businesses and people's homes in danger. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash's comments are good examples of, in Canada, very clear and specific examples of what has happened and can happen. More closely, locally, last election, very specific businesses in my district were targeted by some radicals that were opposing a contested election, and they actually drove around and looked up, and actually this even happened to me, driving around and trying to stifle supporters' free speech of where they place signs, for one, and also who donors were. There was a school board race, and there was some controversy. The people that private citizens that donated, they didn't want to put where they worked because this activity was going on. And so there is a movement to stifle, at least in this case, conservative voices based on where they work, track down their supporters, whether they're the business owner or not. So this bill has some very, very serious implications that are local, not just to our northern border. And we should be working in the opposite direction to instill people's free speech rights more strongly in how they support different candidates. And I'm not gonna call your intent of the bill into question, but in this area and the area that I represent and other areas that I know of, it seems like it's an attempt to stifle a conservative free speech. And so that's very, very troubling. So I will be voting no. And, you know, good. My other question, Mr. Chair, can I have a question of the chair?
Yes, Representative Kosnick, you can ask.
As a newer person on this committee, it's my understanding that generally election bills have had bipartisan agreement before they pass? Is that generally the tradition of this committee?
There has been with the governors in the past have said they would not sign bills that do not have bipartisan support. It says nothing about us passing bills and that maybe one side or the other, but it's election bills that make major changes to election law. Past governors have held that they won't sign them unless they have bipartisan support, but that doesn't pertain to us right now with what we're passing here.
Well, thank you for clarifying that, Mr. Chair, and I hope that tradition is upheld and continues. I recognize the majority's right to introduce bills that they prefer to favor, and this would be one of those bills that has probably strong opposition, and so I appreciate the exercise in the committee hearing, but this is one of those bills that shouldn't see the light of day beyond today. Thank you.
Representative Kozak. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for Representative Lawn. I noticed that in the bill, you do not get rid of the $200 disclosure limit right now. Contributions below $200 are not subject to disclosure. Is your intent to eliminate that disclosure limit as well?
Representative Long.
Thank you for the question, Representative New Brindley. So, no, the intent is not to get rid of that limit. That is a limit that still stays in law. You raised, I think, in our previous hearing on this, the concern that a very, very small independent expenditure that had, for example, three $50 contributions might disclose those names. And I understand that concern and certainly would be open to working on language that would have a $200 limit or something along those lines at the next committee stop. But I don't have an amendment prepared along those lines. But I will note that most independent expenditures far exceed the amounts that would be, that would apply to the $200 thresholds. And so I don't think this concern will come up very often, if at all.
And Representative Long, you're not changing that portion of the law. From my looking at the bill, Representative Long?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Long. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's why I asked the question, because it doesn't change that part of the law, which certainly would imply that there is value in that threshold, and that certainly we have decided as a legislature that a disclosure limit is appropriate and that some contributions would remain anonymous, which is not the case with this language. But I appreciate your willingness, Representative Long, to ensure that is not the case moving forward. Certainly, there are concerns with this bill. That is my number one concern is on disclosure. And frankly, Representative Kozak brings up conservative free speech. But to be clear, this will not just stifle conservative free speech. This will stifle speech, full stop, which is certainly concerning and is never our intention, I don't think. So particularly and it's just really an odd requirement to put the top three contributors on a lit piece. As I've noted before, there are significant concerns with that. One is current disclosure law. And another is just that it's not how campaign finance calendars function right now either. So I think that there are significant concerns there. And again, I think it's really problematic to absolve the legislature of their responsibility by turning over our responsibility on how disclosures are noted on lit pieces and other forms of communication. We determine that in pretty specific detail as a legislature, and I think it is a bad idea to pass that along to an unelected board that is appointed by one person. I think that's a bad idea. I am still a no vote. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Claiborne, you have a question.
Actually, mine's more of a comment. So I'm a co-author on this bill, and I just would like to say that because we are in Minnesota, a divided legislature, every bill that goes before the governor right now will be a bipartisan bill. I just want to remind everybody of that. There is no bill that goes to the governor's desk that's not bipartisan right now. And I would just like to say that, you know, the idea that business owners only support one party or another is also just not an accurate statement. Business owners all across the state support legislators from, I think, every party that is on the ballot. You know, business owners are individuals, and we want to make sure that their voices are heard. And I'm really glad to be in agreement with Representative New Brindley that free speech is important to all of us. And we want to make sure that we keep free speech front and center. And good, healthy campaign finance laws and good, healthy election laws make that happen. So thank you, Representative Long, for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. Representative Drazkowski, your hand popped up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question on the bill. You know, we talked about this last time, and like my Democrat colleagues, I don't see whose jersey this bill has on it or has on. It appears to me to be a nonpartisan bill that really affects people regardless of which side of the aisle. I've already heard from the swamp because I spoke out in favor of the bill last time. Representative Long, thank you for bringing it. I would encourage, Mr. Chair, you to send this thing through to the floor by itself rather than to convolute it with an omnibus election bill. I would like to vote for it on the floor by itself. I'll be supporting the bill today. Thank you, Representative Long and Mr. Chair.
And Representative Drazkowski, the motion that we made before and is sending it to Ways and Means. And so that's where we're going. I think last year we passed an omnibus election bill that's still sitting out there that for right now, unless something changes, we may have a technical bill from the Secretary of State's office, but I don't see us needing to put a huge omnibus election bill forward this year. Representative Bonner, you have your hand up. No one possibly can get the vote.
Yes, thank you. I'll try to be brief. I know it was discussed that this was perhaps considered partisan. I'm glad that Representative Drazkowski pointed out that it is not. And I think there has been repeatedly research that shows that Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, when polled over years and years and years, have suggested that they actually appreciate the idea of transparency. And this bill has wide support among voters. And so I want to reground us in the fact that this bill is really about transparency for our voters. And frankly, if we have issues around lack of civility in other parts of society, I would suggest that maybe we need to have a separate bill to address some of those concerns. But this bill is about transparency. Thanks. And I'll be voting yes.
Thank you with that. And Representative Long, I just got one question, and then we'll possibly get to a vote. This bill does not prevent, say, the National Rifle Association from sending out a postcard to all their members that would be considered member communication if it just goes to their membership, or a local union, or anything that has membership sending communication to their membership. Would that fall underneath this bill? Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that's correct. That's my understanding. That would not be considered an independent expenditure. An independent expenditure would be one that is taken to communicate publicly to influence an election. And I think, Mr. Chair, the important thing to remember here too is that we are not targeting any particular type of speech. There are folks who are on who may support candidates I like, who would be potentially just as unhappy as with having to have the light of transparency shown on them as candidates who I might not like as much. But the goal is to provide better information. And we have $250 right now where individuals are already required to disclose publicly if they are making a contribution. So for individuals who are concerned about transparency, I hope we're not talking about rolling back that requirement. So this is not going to require the disclosure of more individuals than those who are above $250. It's just making it easier for the public to have access to that information.
Representative Brindley, I'll give you the last question. And Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I appreciate your last question. And I would ask maybe if Mr. Sigurdsson could weigh in on that. In previous versions of this bill, there have been specific exclusions for groups that you mentioned doing things like that. That does not seem to be clearly defined in this proposal, in which case my assumption would be that those things would fall under these new requirements. But perhaps Mr. Sigurdsson can tell us if that's already covered elsewhere. But in previous versions of this bill, that has been clearly defined to exclude those things, which is not happening in this version of the bill.
And just as far as your question, Mr. Sigurdsson put his hand up. And so, Mr. Sigurdsson, again, identify yourself for the tape, and then you proceed with the answer to the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jeff Sigurdsson. I'm the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. To Representative New Brindley's question, this somewhat relates to the last time the bill was before the committee. A association that sent to its members strictly an endorsement saying that the following individuals are, I'm going to use an example, let's say it's from a labor union, are labor friendly, have indicated that they are going to support labor positions, and therefore they're endorsed. That's not an independent expenditure. But if what would otherwise be an independent expenditure, we want you to vote for this candidate, is sent to members, that is an independent expenditure. So just the fact that the audience of an independent expenditure happens to be the membership of an association doesn't change the fact that it was an independent expenditure that would, depending on the thresholds, have to be reported to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Sigurdsson. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to be clear, since we are removing the magic words standard, the assumption would be if they hit that $750 threshold, that those would require the disclosure under this bill, because they obviously, the reasonable person would understand that to be that these are the people who support labor, and therefore we should vote for them, right?
Mr. Sigurdsson.
Mr. Chair, Representative New Brindley, quick correction. For independent expenditures, the threshold for registration is $1,500, not $750. But basically, your position is correct, or your statement is correct. If the thresholds for registration were raised or met by the cost of a particular advertisement, and there was no other reasonable interpretation other than the purpose of the communication was to influence voting, then it would fall under the jurisdiction of Chapter 10A.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Sigurdsson. I just wanted to clarify that, because I thought my understanding, and perhaps, Mr. Chair, you were thinking of previous versions of the bill that did ensure that those things would not fall under this express advocacy, but under this current language, the things that you mention coming from labor unions or interest groups like the NRA and others, those would indeed fall under this disclosure and express advocacy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Sigurdsson, I think you said yes to that, but Mr. Sigurdsson, if you want to clarify.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
With that, members, I see no hands popping up on my screen. I'll talk slowly here. And with that, members, I will renew my motion that House File 3190, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And Mr. Brinks, will you please take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
No.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drozdowski.
Aye.
Justowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman is excused.
Representative I'm here.
Greenman aye. Votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam votes nay. Chair with a vote of 8 ayes, 4 nays, and 1 excuse. The motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to Ways and Means. Member, the third bill we have on our agenda this morning is House File 3805, Representative Nash. And this has to go to transportation. So Representative Nash, if you want to make your motion on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that 3805 be brought before the committee and referred to the Transportation Committee.
The motion is before us. The bill is before us. Representative Nash, you want to briefly describe your bill? And I see you've got a couple of testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, briefly is the key word. The bill itself is 2 lines, and it is to repeal the sunset clause on the Advisory Committee on Capital Area Security. The Capital Area Security is a committee that has been around for a while and helps provide legislative insight, private sector insight, departments of administration and public safety insight into keeping our campus safe. And the campus is not just the Capitol or the State Office Building or the Senate Office Building, but the entirety of the area that surrounds the Capitol. I believe, if my memory serves me, it is 26 square miles of area, and the commission is designed to really bring forward ideas to keep us safer, and it is chaired by the Lieutenant Governor. The members on it are the Lieutenant Governor, the Chief Justice Gilday, Senator Limmer, Senator Dibble, Representative Winkler, and myself, and then a number of advisors from various departments. With the prevalence of protests and riots that we've seen, it is universally agreed on by all members on the committee that we keep this going because it has provided such valuable insight into keeping our area safe. So I do have 2 testifiers, Ms. Byrell and Ms. Knutson, and I would let them now take the floor, Mr. Chair.
I see Katie Knutson from the Department of Safety, Public Safety. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everyone. I am Katie Knutson. I am the Chief of Staff at the Department of Public Safety. I can speak both for the Department of Administration and the Department of Public Safety to say that we are grateful to Representative Nash for bringing this bill forward. We do believe that this committee provides a good relationship building and information sharing between the judicial branch, the executive branch, and the legislative branch. And we do believe that continuing this committee indefinitely is important. And so it is. We don't extend the sunset, we delete it. And we think that this committee will continue to provide immense value to those three branches of government and would request your support in our efforts. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Knutson. On my list, I have a Chris Gibbon. Representative Nash, what was the other name that you stated?
Ms. Byrell was, I think Ms. Knutson just spoke on behalf of both admin and DPS. I think Mr. Gibbon is also available to testify if questions arise, but unless he would like to testify, I don't know that we have a need to, but I would say that he's here to answer questions.
Mr. Gibbon, is that the understanding you have, or would you like to give a short brief statement? And if you do, either way, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash. Chris Gibbon here, Director of Facilities Management. I really have nothing to say. I've been on the committee since it was started back in 2012, and I'm proud to serve as an advisor to help facilitate things that the Capitol Complex needs in the way of security.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbon, and stand by for questions. And Representative Quam, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while a lot of people are probably focused on just the rioting and activity in the last few years, I remember being up here in 08 near the Capitol and having my high school son watching rioters going down the street, breaking windows of stores and slashing tires. And so this is not just, you know, the last couple of years. There have been repeated bad activity around within blocks and at the Capitol. And so I would support this continued effort to be vigilant and proactive. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Any further questions? Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be an equal opportunity legislator today and thank Representative Nash and Representative Winkler for the work that they've done on the Capitol Security Committee, and thank Representative Nash for bringing this forward. The Capitol complex is important, not just for legislators, but for the entire state and the people who are interested in participating in our democracy. So I just want to thank Representative Nash for his work.
Any further questions or comments? Seeing nobody's hand jumping up on my screen, Representative Nash, if you want to renew your motion, and then we can get to a vote.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate the insight and input from Representative Claiborne. It is not just for legislators, but for everybody who visits the campus, everybody who works at the campus. And it's very, very important that we keep that safe. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would renew House File 3805 be referred to the Transportation Committee.
Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 3805 be referred to the Transportation Committee. Mr. Brinks, would you please take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman. Greenman is excused. Representative Claiborne.
Claiborne aye.
Claiborne votes aye. Representative Posnick.
Aye.
Posnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pulowski is excused. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam votes aye.
Potential violations.
I think Representative Greenman is back. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Thank you. Chair, with a vote of 12 ayes and one excuse, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the Transportation Committee. And with that, members, I think that's the end of our agenda. We have our next meeting is Thursday. Representative Richardson's bill got moved to Thursday. She had a conflict this morning. And then we have three other bills up on the agenda. And so with that, members, unless there are any more questions, we are adjourned. Thank you.